New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the donate button. We at New Dimensions thank you for your support. It is only through a change in human consciousness that the world will be transformed. The personal and the planetary are connected. As we expand our awareness of mind, body, psyche, and spirit, and bring that awareness actively into the world, so also will the world be changed. This is our quest as we explore new dimensions. You're listening to a New Dimensions Archive Edition, recorded in 1991.
House builder, I behold thee now. Again, a house thou shalt not build. The ridgepole is split, all thy rafters are broken now. My mind, its elements dissolved, the end of cravings has attained. These are the words of the Buddha, and they point to an experience beyond words and thinking. Indeed, even beyond experience, as most of us perceive it to be. This is the ineffable, the end and goal of all spiritual practice. The essence of the essential, into the mystical depths where we leave all ideas, mindsets, perceptions of what it is behind. This is our journey today, to explore the nature of the contemplative life and what lay underneath with our guest, Bernadette Roberts. Bernadette Roberts embarked upon the spiritual path at an early age, which then led her to the life of a nun in a Carmelite cloistered monastery. She entered at age 17 and stayed for nearly 9 years. Since leaving the cloister in the mid-1950s, she has earned degrees in philosophy and education, taught and operated her own Montessori school, and married and raised 4 children. She is the author of The Experience of No Self, The Path to No Self, and What Is Self. Join us for the next hour as we explore the ineffable with our guest, Bernadette Roberts. My name is Michael Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Bernadette, welcome.
Thank you.
You had some rather remarkable experiences as a young child, and I'd like you to share some of those with our audience. At age 5, something happened. Perhaps you can tell us about it.
Well, I've talked about it so much. You know, it's like going over old. It's almost a... It's almost like telling the story. It's almost no longer personal in a way when you talk about it so much.
Yeah.
But I was going out to play one day with my friends, and I lived in a 2-story house, and I heard them outside, and I hollered out the window. I said, "Wait for me, I'm coming." So I ran outside, and it was a windy day. It must have been in autumn because there were leaves swirling around out in our paved backyard there. And I was going around the back door. I was going to run around to the front of the house. And suddenly, from inside myself, enormous welling up that I can only call an infusion. Because if a balloon could feel, this is what it would feel like, somebody blowing air into it. That's what it felt like. That blowing air into it is very powerful. The balloon seemed to expand on all sides, and I stopped and looked around to my body, my hands, my feet, to see if somehow I was growing in all dimensions. And I couldn't, but I was just the same. So I stood still there, and this thing was so overwhelming, I got frightened. All of a sudden, I was frightened because I felt I was going to bust. And I wasn't sure at that time what I meant, but the whole connotation was that it was frightening. I was frightened at that. I felt that this power was just going to do away with me. That's it, whatever this was. But then at a certain point, it stopped. You know, this expansion, it stopped. And then it was like a burst of tremendous joy. However, written across my mind were the words, "You're too big for yourself." And it was an explosion of tremendous joy. And it was like something was there. This power was kind of a personal power. It wasn't just some odd feeling or sensation or anything. This was a real, almost like a revelation of something to me. And I was just wild with this joy, and I ran around front. I'd stopped, stood absolutely still. Then I ran around to my friends in the front, these three or four little boys that I played with every day. And I said to them, "I feel the energy of 10 men in me." And I said, do you feel like that? Have you ever felt that? That you've got all this energy? And I kept trying to describe my experience to them. And then suddenly I realized they were staring at me with open mouths. They looked like statues. They didn't say anything. They just stared at me. And then I thought, I've got to get some life in these kids. So I said, all right. Then it was my task when we played cops and robbers. I always set the scene. I said, okay, you be the cop, you be the robber, and this is what's happened, and now we'll go. So let's get ready. You got to count 10 so, you know, we robbers can get away and all that. So that was an experience there. That experience, even though that energy subsided from then on until I was 9, 9 and a half, whenever I looked in, I could see that. This became my friend, you might say. Totally imageless, nothing but a power. It was not, we didn't chit-chat or talk or anything. By its movements, it let me know that it was present, because sometimes I would say, "Are you there?" And one time, it was like an explosion of this power from there that knocked me physically down, and that frightened me. And I thought, it's trying to tell me something. You see, I learned all the time. It's like saying, don't ask, because, you know, you can see it. In other words, all you have to do is look within to see it. And I realized, then that I could always look in and see this, kind of like something in the center of yourself. I can't describe it. I realized when it disappeared, and the day it disappeared, it left a big black hole in its wake. Then I suddenly realized what I'd been seeing all the time was some little, you might call, light. But you don't know the light until you suddenly you're dark.
When that happened, you were in the midst of, you had a bone disease. Isn't that when that happened?
When it disappeared, yes, when I was 9, yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us about that it disappeared, and then what happened?
Well, that just threw me through a loop.
Kind of lost your trust or faith there for a moment there, didn't you?
No, my brain stopped.
Brain stopped?
My brain stopped. I couldn't think. I could not think. And for 3 days I lay in bed and didn't move, couldn't eat. My mother kept trying to feed me soup and stuff with her. I couldn't talk to her. She kept saying, "What's the matter?" I couldn't, nothing. My head was not functioning at all. I was wide awake, never slept. But my head, I couldn't even think about it. It's like my brain stopped. Something, this was a very dramatic thing. Then one day I was just looking at the wall and I saw a picture of the sea. I lived by the sea. It was like watching a moving picture of the sea. And suddenly that sparked something in me, because I so love the sea. The sea was my first love before I ever saw this interior power. And it was like saying, only I could get to the sea. I got to get to the sea. So I was very sick. I couldn't move. Just trying to get up was so painful I could hardly move. But I got up very early the next day. And I got dressed like I was going for school. My mother was so alarmed. She, in other words, I wouldn't listen to her. I just got dressed and walked out of the house. She kept telling me to go back to bed. It was a very traumatic thing. And I led her to believe I was going to school, but I walked down to the ocean and I walked into the sea. And, you know, what happens, I stood by the sea because I always felt so cured there of all my problems, like they were blown away. And when the water came up, I was extremely cold. When the water came up on my feet, they felt so warm. So I thought, I'm going to get it a little bit more. So I walked in up to my knees and it felt so good. Now, you see, I had this bone disease. And so I thought, I'm going to get this water up to my hip. And when I did, it was a marvelous relief because of this disease, they used to take me swimming all the time anyway. And then I thought, there was just this wave coming. I thought, I'm going to go under, just go completely under. And I did. And the minute I went under the water, my head cleared. It was a moment of resurrection. It really was. And I thought, I'm myself again. I am myself. It was, there's more, a little more to that whole experience, too. It's kind of odd, isn't it?
Well, it's awesome. I mean, you had the experience of a non-identity. I mean, you had no identity at all.
No, really, I was out of it.
And then the water kind of, in some ways, blessed you, Grace.
It was cured. Yes, it was. I always used to think to myself, when you're in trouble, Bernadette, don't go to church, just hang on to a tree. in my spiritual life, nature was just always, always, always part of that. You see, if I had any experience or any knowledge that didn't include nature, I'd say forget it. It couldn't be true. Because I experienced that whole mystery of nature when I was probably no more than 3. And I knew that I was part of that. I used to be able just to dissolve and be part of that. Oh, it's a marvelous experience. You know, you don't know if you're a little cork or you could be a weed or a rock. It was a beautiful experience there, just being one with all that. So I had those experiences also, as well as this kind of imminent interior power that was in there, which was not me. I never thought it was me. Boy, it could come and go and knock you down. It just wasn't me.
There was another experience that struck me because it happened on the radio, and I related to it because identified with it in some ways because I used to listen to the Lone Ranger show, too.
Oh, yeah, I guess we all did in our age. Yeah.
But I have to say, I never had the experience that you had from listening to the Lone Ranger.
Music.
Yeah, tell us about that experience.
You know, I don't remember. You're referring to
the music that
I suddenly realized that the story was just so bad. that what I loved was the music, and music and nature played very dual, common parts in my spiritual life. I've listened to classical music all my life. Fortunately, so did my mother. I was taught the piano, taken to operas at the age of starting at 10. We went to all the opera. So I had a real good background in classical music, but I mean starting as a little one, I loved it.
But the music of the Lone Ranger was sort of a catalyst and propelled you into stopping your mind, I think, what happened. Isn't that what happened?
Oh, yeah, I always noticed that. I think that was one of the drawing powers of classical music because I could immerse myself in it and just, you could be the music. I realized as a child, you could just be it. It so went through your whole person that you could be it. And it always uplifted me. If I was ever sad or anything, I'd fool around on the radio till I'd get a classical music station. And then I'd just sink into that and it was wonderful, even if it was sad. I found out that my imagination, if I tried to use my imagination, you know how sometimes when we listen to music and we think we see old pastoral scene, or you might see something romantic. You know how it evokes different responses in us. I realized at an early age that ruined the music, that I must not have any images or imagination what's going on. Or in other words, try to put a story to it. I realize that you ruin it then, because the music, you just have to go with it. No place. Mm-hmm. But it's elevating. It's a different experience. The life is full of so many experiences in nature and in music and in God's grace, which I don't know where that comes from. It's not music. It's not nature. Right. So they're kind of different categories of different dimensions of existence that are possible to us human beings, yeah.
Bernadette, you were saying that you would like to be able to express yourself like the music.
Yeah, wouldn't that be nice? I have no talent for speaking. I do go around and speak. And I have no talent for writing either. It's interesting. I just don't have it. It's an art. It's an art form to be able to speak well and to match what you're saying with your delivery. I never felt that I could match what I really had to say with any kind of delivery. I couldn't match it in writing and speaking. I really had, all my life, I think I've had a sense of helplessness in not being able to express that. I feel it's not just that I'm inadequate. Sometimes I think just being a human being is inadequate to really express that. We often talk about creation is an expression of God. I don't know that a human being, it's the highest, the most difficult. But sometimes I think that they're better expressions of God than...
Like what?
Well, now that you pinpoint me, I think maybe just plain silence, which is hard to come by. And it's a specific type of silence. It isn't just, you know, being in a, you know, padded cell or something where there's no sound. It's more than that. So that something comes through there that's marvelous too. That's an expression. Of course, I think of nature as a most marvelous expression. All the facets of nature is a marvelous expression of God. I think our own selves and our own we get in the way. That's why human beings are not usually such marvelous expressions. They should be though. You know, in certain cases you can see that coming through, but it's so rare. I just don't feel that they themselves in their own existence are usually marvelous expressions of God. An infant. I see infants every week at the hospital, and they are. There's something beautiful about it, the little infant.
When they open their eyes and they're
kind of
so clear.
Innocent. Yeah, right.
Clear.
Everything is so new to them. See, for us, it's all old hash.
Well, what is it? Jesus said he'd become as a little child.
Oh, yeah.
Perhaps that's what he was talking about, going back
mystical.
To that innocence.
Well, that's a state of consciousness, too.
Yeah, I know we're going to get to that.
Really
what you're talking about is in literally beyond the state of consciousness, isn't it?
Yes, right. Even before that, pre-reflexive, right?
So is consciousness for you relative?
Yes.
Relative. It's a relative phenomenon.
Yes, there's nothing absolute about
it. So when we say at the beginning of this program, it is only through a change of consciousness that the world will
be
changed.
Well, you have to change it first. It's there,
yes.
And you have to change that first. We might discuss that a bit, how that works. If you say think of consciousness as a vase or some kind of container, I often, in my talks, I use the image of a balloon. Okay, now God infuses himself. This eternal life is infused into consciousness, like the air going into the balloon. And, you know, the balloon can expand. When the air comes into it, it expands. So consciousness is expanding. But it only has, it's limited, though. I see it as a created something, and therefore it has a limitation. The balloon can only expand so far. But what's marvelous is that the balloon, as it expands, you know, as you stretch it, stretch what I call stretching the human limits, it becomes transparent, you know, like a bubble. Becomes stretched so thin, becomes transparent. So, you know, you can hardly tell the difference between the air and the balloon. From the balloon, we go to the image of a bubble. You know, it's just a bubble is a beautiful thing. Well, balloons are too, for that matter. But then one day, it's like it's so full of this air, this divine air, that it pops. And in the case of the bubble, we say, well, where does it go? Well, first of all, it's a little drop of water in your hand, and then that evaporates back into the air, which, as we said, was divine. So we can expand consciousness to the point at which it falls away. That has been my experience. I'm just not making that up as a theory, but that has been my experience. that it simply falls away. That's consciousness to me is the same thing as a self.
But in some ways, before that, you really have to go beyond the self to have that.
Well, the ego self, yes.
Yeah.
You have to go. You see, I often think when God infuses himself into that center of, the little balloon's got that center, when he infuses that, he kind of blows out the ego. Because you see, that center there is just now God. That's a divine center. That's where God comes in, infuses himself. I often compare the God within the balloon to what we call God immanent, God within us. But look, the balloon's in the air, too. So that's God transcendent. God is beyond the balloon. And the balloon is in God. You understand? We are in God at the same time God is in us. Now, they're one. The immanent and transcendent are one. But we have very different experiences about that. You see, God immanent is very personal to us. God transcendent is kind of beyond us, you know, that ineffable something immutable that we can't talk about. Here, I see Buddhism as having much more of a transcendent view, whereas the Hindu is mainly stresses the immanent, you know, the inner God. And
the Atman, the Brahman.
Yes, right, yeah. Right. It seems to be within, although...
But the Hindus, the view is that it's all consciousness, that the Atman is consciousness. And
well, the highest consciousness
yes.
really is Atman. Yeah. I can't see that.
So there's something beyond
I'm not
that.
Hindu. But that's all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And when the Buddhists
say... Well, they're on to something, yes, indeed.
When the Buddhists say no thingness, nothingness,
oh, yes,
and
no
emptiness...
Thing. Yes, that's more the transcendent
it's
God,
more
right?
More the transcendent.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Even
but
though they don't use the term God.
No, I understand that.
Yeah.
Buddha nature, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not hung up on words.
Right, it's the similar
no,
energy.
You
the
get
energy
that.
Is the same.
Well, you get that. So, what were we talking about? Anyway, consciousness and going beyond. I'm just trying to describe that you know, that it is possible to go beyond consciousness. Now, you see, for most people, that is unthinkable.
That's a major step.
Well, yep. Well, it is unthinkable.
It's a major step. I mean,
you can't. Consciousness cannot think about that because that which would think about it would be consciousness. You say. You,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It would be, in fact, beyond consciousness, it's also unthinkable. So either way you look at it, it really is, and I'm sympathetic with people like that, and they say, oh, how radical that is to say there's no consciousness left. But I see that as the essence of man and what he is. And it doesn't mean that he then becomes an animal, because that's just a sensory being. I mean, the senses. As I see it, animals don't have really consciousness. We project that on them. But the sensory way of knowing is mystical in itself. You know, our vegetative knowing is mystical in itself. Who's telling your liver what cell and what to do now? You're not. Consciousness isn't running that show. And neither are the senses.
There was something that you...
Wisdom of the body, we call it.
You wrote about self-reflection mm-hmm. and self-reflection with
They're
an
different.
X.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, that unconscious that we're not aware of that's
right.
going on.
That's reflection, what I call it, with an X. That is an automatic autonomous. By that I mean it's not under conscious control. We're born with that mind, that reflexive mechanism of our mind. And it's going on all the time. When we become aware of it, then we rise to the more conscious level, which I call reflective level. Whereby we can deliberately reflect, deliberately do something with our mind, you might say. But on a reflexive level, it's beyond us. That is something that that's what it means to be human. That's what we have. You know, we don't have a choice to be human. We can be more fully human or good human and all that, but we don't really have a choice to be human or not.
So you don't believe in the Eastern idea of reincarnation?
Oh, no.
Karma? No.
Oh, no. No. We're born new every day. I've had so many, what you call, experiences of being brand new. Many of those. I mean, I can understand the context of one life, yes. Renewal and, well, like some of the Christians are talking about being reborn in that, you know. Well, we're reborn all the time.
Well, then how do you explain the tremendous inequities or injustices in the world that some people are born into poverty in Bangladesh and others are born into wealth and luxury?
Yeah, but we're all equal in God's eyes. I don't care if you're born how you're... That is inconsequential. We're all born human beings. We're all created by God. We all have access to His grace. I don't care what. So we are equal. You know.
But someone in Bangladesh may not have the same opportunities to even reach a level of discussing what we're discussing because of the circumstances.
He might be more mystical than any of us. Uh-huh. Because you can discuss it doesn't mean that you are a privileged soul.
Right.
No.
That's true.
In fact, I know a beautiful story of taken from, if you want to hear it. Well, this curé of ours, he's a Catholic saint. He was just a priest in France, I think the 19th century in there, not too long ago. He was so stupid at the seminary, they didn't think they should ordain him at all. And they said, well, just send him out in the boonies. You know, what he can't do any harm, you just send him out there. Well, he so happened he was a saint. Maybe that's why he was so stupid in his theology courses, I don't know. But he went out there, and he became a great discerner of spirits, and people came from all over the world to get his direction. He's the ultimate spiritual director, as a term. But this was just a little peasant village that he would send to. And every day on his way to the orphanage or wherever he did some of his work, he would pass by the church, and the door was always open in the church. And every day he would see some old man sitting there in the back of the church just staring ahead. And when he'd come home hours later, sometimes in the evening, the man would still be sitting there. So one day he saw this man. He said, what would you do? Is sitting in that church there. Now, you have to understand that in the Catholic Church, we believe that God is physically present. And Christ, you know, in the Eucharist, in the tabernacle. Very mystical thing in itself. But that's the faith. All right, so he said to this man, what are you doing there? Now, and the man said, I just look at God and God looks at me. Well, of course, this curé, this priest, he knew that this man was a genuine, this is a very contemplative thing. You know, this is the eye seeing itself. I mean, this is the contemplative gaze. This man had reached a very high degree of prayer in his prayer life. Now, this man, I'm going to assume, I don't remember it in the story, that he never knew anything about mysticism or mystics. He didn't know, he probably never read them. I mean, he might have been illiterate. Just an old man, wanted to be close to God, just sit there in God's presence, just looking, probably looking at nothing. But he knew God, faith, the inner eye, he saw. So, you know, when you talk to me about people who don't have advantages of education or being here or this or that, I just say, to hell with all that. There are other advantages that God has for all of us. And it is, I don't care who you are or where you live. Or, you know, there's nothing that can get in the way of that. In fact, our problem is that we go around seeking these so-called advantages to the detriment of our own spiritual life, to the detriment of that which really matters in life. So seeking all these advantages and fighting for them and all, it's a waste. In any eternal sense. Sure, I think if somebody's out there begging, we have to help. Somebody's in need, we have to, if we can do it, we have to help. So I'm not saying that we shouldn't do anything or be unjust or unkind or uncompassionate. But let's face it, you know, the things that really matter, we're only going to be here a few years and then it's eternal life.
I'm speaking with Bernadette Roberts, the author of The Experience of No Self, The Path to No Self, and What is Self. You're listening to New Dimensions. Bernadette, one of the things that you wrote about and written about in your books is the dark night of the soul and the idea that one has to go through a purgative stage, a suffering stage, to reach the levels that you're talking about. What about that, that the idea that we have to suffer in order to grow, expand, deepen?
I think that you put your finger on what I see as a big difference between Christianity and particularly not just in their mystical system or their mystical tradition, but in their whole perspective, the religious perspective, and that of any other religion. We see suffering as not just redemptive or something, but as something, it's the way, it's actually the way to the resurrection. And we've got to face it. Even Buddha, when he, after his nirvana, he looked around this world and he said, all is suffering. But there, the whole point was to get out of it. Whereas for the Christian, it is to embrace that, to unite that with Christ's suffering, to become co-redeemers of the world. This is what St. Paul said, to make up in our own suffering that which was lacking in our own lives, what was lacking in Christ's suffering, which means we all are part of this. First of all, I don't want to just say it's inevitable, because ultimately the saints will go out and seek it, because this is the test. If you understood how consciousness worked, and I do try and demonstrate this, when you become aware of a divine center, let's say all this horrible stuff comes in from you, into you from the outside, and it comes in and you get sad or you get hurt or angry, whatever it is, all of a sudden when it hits that divine center, when it hits the center, you know, I'm talking about when this gets deeper and deeper in us, suddenly it hits a certain threshold. And at that threshold, suddenly there's God for you. And suddenly there is peace, joy in the midst of suffering. It's like God's whole presence. That's why the saints went out and even sought suffering, because then they would get God's presence even more. God, they would even be more aware of God sometimes in suffering than when everything is just so-so and nothing's happening. So suffering makes us more aware of God. Also, it is a way in itself initially of growth. Well, you're going, you know, this balloon we talked about, when you stretch the human limits, I don't know why people seem to think it's going from one ecstasy to another. I always say grace. In Christian theology, we say grace perfects nature. I don't go along with it. It perfects it, yeah. But in a way we don't realize, as I see it, grace goes contrary to our own nature. It perfects it by going contrary to it. Can you understand that?
So where does grace come from?
Oh, well, that's God's life in us. That is God's life in us. That's God in us. It goes contrary to our nature. The reason why, if you're going to be transformed, can you imagine the cocoon? He's not going to come out in a static little caterpillar in his cocoon. He's going to come out a whole new insect or whatever you want to call it. A whole different dimension he's taking on. He's in a very one- or two-dimensional, the caterpillar is. But the butterfly, he's got the ultimate dimension, looking down on everything. So for that freedom to move, I mean, there's no comparison between the butterfly. But to get from the caterpillar to the butterfly, hey, you got to go through something. And it isn't just transformation. In Christianity, we have transfiguration and even transubstantiation. I mean, we're talking about even a change of substance here. I am, anyway.
Well, the caterpillar has to liquefy.
Does he? I don't know what he's doing.
Yeah, the caterpillar actually liquefies.
Does he?
To become a butterfly.
Oh,
it actually
God.
Has to let go of all the structure.
Oh, my God, right.
The whole structure.
It's worse than I thought it was. but that's the point. To why people seem to think that you're just going to go to sleep one day and wake up this enlightened being, or wake up... a new person, as we often say in Christianity, the totally new Christ person, to think that you don't have to go through something, that's just such naivety. And that's why when I look around at other religions, and they don't put that up front, I don't know if they put it under the carpet or they're not even getting there. I just don't know.
Well, I recall when growing up, and I was raised Catholic, I used to be told about the saints, that nuns would tell me about the saints, and I used to always think that was so totally unavailable to me, that life. It seemed like the saints had things happen to them, and I never had those things happen to me.
Mm-hmm.
And we'd talk about it to other kids. We'd talk about it and say, anything like that ever happened to you? No, nothing ever like that happened to me. No. And it was like such sort of an experience that was kind of out there somewhere that wasn't accessible, wasn't available.
Well, I'll tell you how I handled that growing up in the same thing. When I put it to my father used to deny that man could experience God as he was in himself. So I accepted that as when I was 5 or 6. But by the time I got to 10 and had read The Lives of the Saints, so I went back to my dad and said, hey, they saw God, they felt God. What do you mean that we can't experience God? And he said, and I quoted him some saints from their lives, and he said, oh, that. He said, that grace was just given to them to increase their faith. I immediately assumed that saints were people without faith or low on faith. And that without these extraordinary experiences, they wouldn't have had any faith. And that was my view of saints when, as a child, from when was I, maybe 8, 9 on, that these are people that would not serve God. They might have been devils, but they needed these particular favors, you might say, in order to serve God at all. Whereas there's other people who can serve God without it. So that's how I handled this whole saint business. I looked upon them as people who were really desperately in need, who were people who wouldn't serve God without that. And I used to think, but I've got strong faith. I don't need that.
One of the things that interested me was at some point you turned from who you were relating to as God to Mary.
Yeah.
Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so when I mentioned earlier at 9, we talked about this interior whole power suddenly leaving me. In other words, just leaving a black hole in its wake. It just, like the bottom had dropped out of the very center of my being. And, of course, at that time I had the bone disease, and they didn't know yet that it was a bone disease. They were still looking around for it. And how can I say that? This is, but before this interior power disappeared, at the very moment, in fact, I had been trying to pray to God for help, that they would find what this problem was with me, because it's a very painful disease. And when I prayed to God, it was like I was praying to see and he wasn't there for me. That's when I turned within to my friend within, and suddenly that disappeared too. I mean, that's when I personally collapsed. Okay, so now you don't have any God, and you don't have any interior friend, everything. You're by yourself. So my father said, we're going to go to Mexico City to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe, and we're going to pray there for a miracle. We're going to, and I was against that. But when I got down there, I had a very, very marvelous experience. And let's just say from then on, Our Lady was always there for me, you know. But what I asked her, I told her I wanted to see God. And I just knew that she would give me that favor. And also from then on, I almost stopped asking her for things because I always got them. See, I had stopped asking God for anything long ago because he's going to do his own thing. And, you know, it doesn't matter what you want or anything. All my life, I've never asked God for things. But Mary, I will. But I have to be very careful what I ask because I'll always get it. So she's very, I used to experience her presence beside me. You see, the difference between Mary and Christ or God is that God is within. And we experience an utterly transcendent way. But Mary is always outside us. You know, much more of a human, really human presence there, invisible, lovely, compassionate, motherly presence. But always outside. Mary's never inside.
What about the goddess?
I don't know. Where did that come from? Well, I don't understand anything about the goddess because Some people seem to think the word God, this is something new. It's shocking to me when I found out about a few years ago. Some people now think that God is a male. Well, I never thought that in my whole life, so that's shocking.
You never thought God was a male?
Never. Never. In fact, I had, until I was 15, I had a problem with seeing Christ. I didn't say, I always say I was born a Jew, because I just didn't see how I could ever believe Christ was God. Because what I experienced of God within, the God I saw in the mountains, this was a very transcendent experience I had. And in nature, none of this talk spoke to me of Christ. I thought, hey, he's a wonderful person, but God, I couldn't believe that.
But it had no gender, it had no he or she about it?
That's right. No, never did. In fact, even when at 15 I saw that Trinity, which really was, I call my conversion experience.
That was in the
that
Sierra.
That Trinity. No.
This was another experience.
Yeah, right. I do put it down. I think it's in the book, though.
Yeah.
But even though there was, to some extent, that image of Christ on the cross, nevertheless, it, in itself, it was the image was dead. It was something else that was there, you see, that I knew. Suddenly I knew Christ. But only in the Trinity. I've never been able to see Christ or understand Christ apart from the Trinity, from the Godhead. I can't do that. Some people treat the historical Christ as God. I could never do that.
So Mary is a link to God, is an intercessor to God? Is that what Mary is?
Well, next to Christ, she's top. She's tops, you know what I'm saying? How can I say? I used to think, though, when I really considered Mary, that because I found God always to be rather harsh, you know, God never paying attention to me. That may sound odd, having lived my whole life with God. God just never paid any, God had a work to do in me, and he was going to do it. I knew that from the time I was a child, and so you just have to grow used to that. But it's like saying, Bernadette, I don't care, you know, what else is going on in your life. I don't care this, you know, that's a part of it, or else this terrible thing is going to happen because this is going to be a part of it. You know, what you want, what you, this, and forget you. God, as I always say, God is no respecter of persons. He's disrespectful. But Mary, you see, I always used to feel that God deliberately had Mary here to counteract that work that God had to do in us. This, that she could say to God, now wait a minute, you know, you can still have your way, but we're going to do this now, we're going to see, you know, like the good mother. And so I always felt Mary is the good mother, but I felt a very special creation of God. Almost one time I compared it to like the feminine side of God. But I never really saw God divided into feminine and masculine, so therefore I wouldn't hold that to be true. But I would say, yes, a very feminine manifestation, particular manifestation of God. Mary is that, a very feminine, powerful, marvelous.
Have you been to Ireland, Bernadette?
No, I'd love to go because that's my ancestry.
One of the things you can see in Ireland as you drive around the country is these shrines to Mary everywhere.
Really? Yes. Really? That's sweet.
Yeah.
That's sweet. It must create a softness.
Ireland's a very soft country.
Is it really?
Yes. Very soft feeling.
You think of a tough climate and kind of poor people.
Well,
tough
but you
people.
See visible there is 10,000 years of the spiritual quest because this is all built out of stone.
Yes.
So you see that. It's present everywhere you go.
Spiritual people, I think, even when they don't practice their faith and make fun of it and all that, I think they're profoundly, the Irish are profoundly spiritual people.
Well, I think the people that have lived there for many, many millennia have been spiritually motivated in a deep way. One of the things you wrote, which intrigued me about Western psychology, was that it was wholly concerned with the ego and its comfort. You still feel that? Believe that?
Well, did I write that?
Yeah, you did. I quoted Western psychology is wholly concerned with the ego and its comfort. And I wrote down the word transpersonal because maybe this was pre-transpersonal psychology. I don't know. Transpersonal psychology being that form of psychology that's trying to include the spirit.
But of course,
it still is based in psychology. And
Yes. The problem with any psychology, particularly more modern analytical psychology and so on, is that it really, in and of itself, as a science or as a discipline, it cannot account for grace. Can't deal with grace. It never will. So consequently, they're always wanting to explain this in this terms, or in a way it becomes highly rational to some extent, but it cannot deal with grace. And so
grace represents...
It won't help us. It's not going to be all that much help. I think, yes, on a mundane level of relationships and all kinds of problems that we have in life, yes, psychology can help us. But as far as, I always say to the psychologist, stay out of the spiritual life. You really can't really deal with it because you can't deal with grace. What grace is really, it interrupts your life. And there's no second guessing it. And it's not dependent upon your situation in life. Doesn't care who you are or what your relationships are. Doesn't care if you're crazy or you're a theologian or you're... Doesn't man or woman, it doesn't care about any of that.
How do you recognize grace?
Oh, well, that's God's life in us. Yeah. Strictly speaking, grace really operates on a level below consciousness. I mean, it's beyond consciousness.
What if you are a person who don't think you have God's life in you? I mean, does grace
still
operate?
Oh, it's impossible.
Impossible.
It's impossible. Everybody has God in them. Yes.
Everybody has God in
them.
Yes. But whether you're conscious,
yes.
What are you not conscious of it, though?
Oh, well, what can I say about that?
A lot of people aren't conscious of that.
They're not conscious of it, you say?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Do they experience grace?
Well, yes. Yes, I often compare the contemplative and the non-contemplative. To the non-contemplative, say they're doing the same work and living the same life, and but they're very different people, have very different perspective. And I always say that the non-contemplative lives grace on an unconscious level, whereas the contemplative lives it consciously. He's somebody who's really aware of how that's working in him. Whereas other people, it's almost more miraculous in as much as they do things, beautiful, wonderful things, and they don't really see where it's coming from. They don't know what's prompted them. They don't know. They're just doing this. It's marvelous how this works.
What about prayer? How would you describe prayer? What is your definition
There's all
of prayer?
It's a relationship with God. And it has so many rungs in that ladder that you can go from just total silence to prayer, petition, God help me. There's just all kinds of prayer. You know, God, Christ said, I think it was Christ or Paul, and, you know, pray without ceasing.
There's a lot of prayers.
That means it has to be your whole life.
A lot of prayer is oriented to getting something.
Oh, that's just so ridiculous.
Like,
give
me that.
We can't deal with that. I can't deal with that. No, that just makes God's kind of your valet. You know, get me this, do me that. I mean, I don't say that. That is dishonorable. You dishonor God with that kind of thing. Like in the Lord's Prayer, we're really asking for something, but we're asking to accept God's will. You know, that's a little different. We're not asking for the really things of this world. We ask for our daily bread, but, you know, I have a very mystical interpretation of that.
Which
because the Eucharist, that's Christ. That's our daily bread. If you understand what that means, that his mystical body is transformed.
So it's what Jesus did at the Last Supper, in other words.
The Eucharist is Jesus. It's not just what he did.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. No, he is. He is that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's our daily bread, is Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that's why I'm saying, you know, to ask for more Christ, for God to enter our lives more fully. I don't look upon that quite as the same valet service, because there's a sense there that very humble, mystical. In other words, you want what really matters. So I don't know what else to really say about prayer. You know, I always say, people ask me about, you know, techniques and things like that. And, or how do you, can you talk to us about prayer and that? And I cannot address the subject of prayer because this is the Christian perspective. When you love somebody, nobody has to tell you what to do. You know how to love that other person. And that's our relationship with God, is one of love. And nobody has to tell us what to do. You can't make a technique out of love. It does not give way to any technique. When you love somebody, just ask yourself, what do you do? Well, you want to be with them. You want to be where they are. You want to be aware of them all the time. They're always in your thoughts and in your heart. You want to make yourself pleasing to them. You know, give them gifts, do things for them. And just be even just silently in their presence. I don't see how you, and if sometimes you want to talk to them, sometimes you just want to sit silently and love them. There's just no technique. And I don't appreciate Christians going around trying to teach techniques. Because it gives a false impression that somehow we can. Of course, we do in the contemplative life. We do struggle with our distractions, you know, not being able to keep them on God and so on. So, but I found that my prayer life was never the same from one day to another. Every day, you know, some days I'd say to myself, you know, it would be so good, that hour of silent sitting would be so good. I'd say, now I've got the secret. Now I know just what to do, you know, kind of just abandon all and just be there in the presence. And then you come the next day and it doesn't work. And then it's like starting all over again. Then all of a sudden you kind of get into this little space and you say, oh, now I know. Now I've got it. And the next day it doesn't work. You know, it's just because we're constantly changing, really. And that's okay.
So it's also a process of letting go each day.
Always,
letting
always.
Letting go of the past.
That's right. And, you know, we think we have let go of the last thing, and we go to prayer the next day, and we find out, hey, some news popped up here, and now you have to let go again. Every day is something new. Every day. It's like there's no end of letting go of ourselves.
Just like the Buddhists say, be detached, to not be attached, to allow it to...
Well, to me, it even goes beyond that, because I say, God, take it. You see, my view is when I present this, which I'll be doing this evening, presenting this kind of paradigm I have of self-aware consciousness, I use a circle. Now, the very center of it is God. Now, my view of the spiritual life is that now consciousness being a paper circle and the center being an empty center, you're just going to cut the hole out of the center of the paper. That is God. It's an empty center in the center of ourselves. Now, as we progress in the spiritual life, there becomes less paper and more center. In other words, God increases as I decrease. So it's a little more than just being detached. It's like God is absorbing that self. Basically, I see it as a fire consuming it to non-existence, to ashes. In other words, it's a paradox because as self is fulfilled, self is diminished. But can you see how that works?
Mm-hmm.
You're fulfilled. You're becoming more filled with God.
So eventually
at the same time, that's right. That last rim of the paper is what I call the fine line.
You burned yourself up.
I didn't do that. You self can't get rid of itself. You can't burn yourself up. No, that's God's... That living flame of love inside, that's God consuming us. And we let him. But it's a little more than just being detached. I mean, when I say let go, I say, hey, you may never see it again. It doesn't mean that I'm always going to have it, but now I'm not so attached to it. I find out we sometimes fool ourselves in that respect. We say, oh, I'm not detached to my home. I'm not detached to the food. I'm not attached to anything. Okay, then if suddenly God took everything away from you, this happened to me, and you had no home, you had no food, you didn't have a dime, believe me, Now you know that's the ultimate detachment. God's the only one that can detach us. He just take it away.
Bernadette, I feel like there's a lot more we could talk about, but we're out of time.
Well, I want to thank you and your wife for having me. I've enjoyed talking to you.
Well, it's been great talking to you, to Bernadette. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
I've been speaking with Bernadette Roberts, former Carmelite nun, and author of The Experience of No Self, The Path to No Self, and What is Self. If you'd like more information about the books by Bernadette Roberts, you can write to in care of Joseph Conti, that's C-O-N-T-I, Post Office Box 18803, Los Angeles, California, 90018. That address again for information about the books of Bernadette Roberts, in care of Joseph Conti, Post Office Box 18803, Los Angeles, 90018. My name is Michael Toms. On behalf of the New Dimensions radio staff and all those who are members of Friends of New Dimensions, I'm wishing you contemplation in your life.
You've been listening to a New Dimensions archive edition, recorded in 1991. New Dimensions Radio has been making a difference on our planet since 1973, thanks to the generosity of our listeners. You too can help make a difference with a tax-deductible donation or membership. Please visit our website, newdimensions.org, and just click the Donate button. You can also subscribe to our free weekly podcasts and find over 1,000 hours of audio dialogues in our searchable archive. New Dimensions is produced by New Dimensions Radio in Santa Rosa, California, USA. Our executive producer is Justine Willis-Toms. Our post-production editor is Lou Judson. For over 4 decades, New Dimensions has been producing weekly conversations at the leading edge. We sincerely thank all of you who have supported us by being members of Friends of New Dimensions, as well as members of our affiliate stations. My name is Dan Drayson. On behalf of everyone at New Dimensions, whose endeavors make this program possible, I'm wishing you well. New Dimensions Radio is an independent producer supported by listener contributions. To find out more about the program you've just heard, to subscribe to our free weekly newsletter and our New Dimensions and New Dimensions Cafe podcasts, and to access thousands of other programs in the New Dimensions archive, please visit our website, newdimensions.org. That's newdimensions.org. Or call us at 707-468-5215. That's 707-468-5215. Please join us next time as we explore New Dimensions.